I want to express my respect and gratitude to the traditional people of Elko Island, the Yolngu people. I honour their culture, customs and traditions. I respect the land that we are on and acknowledge that the land is sacred, spiritual and special.
Elko only done more dances here, you know, instead of going to Darwin all the time.
It's about getting people back home where they belong. When we had the opening of dialysis, we hired an Air North plane to get the patients here for the day for the opening, and you'd see all the grandkids running up and down, and they were so excited because their family members were coming home.
Welcome to Two Worlds, One Health, a podcast that explores beliefs about health and sickness from two different perspectives and the stories within these worlds. I'm Luana Grant, and in this series, we journey alongside Dr. Sarah Hania to Northeast Arnhem Land, deep in the top end to Elko Island. Sarah is a senior research fellow at the University of Melbourne and works closely with communities to improve outcomes for First Nations peoples. In this episode, we'll learn how a remote community is blending traditional knowledge and health practices alongside Western medicine care to manage chronic renal failure, a disease with high rates of incidence in Indigenous populations. Charlie, a patient receiving care at the new dialysis unit on Elko Island, shares his experience of the impact of receiving care on country. And we'll also hear from Kat, who works for an organisation called Purple House, who set up and run dialysis units in remote Aboriginal communities.
Charlie, thank you so much for coming to be interviewed today. I really appreciate your time to be part of this podcast, Two Worlds, One Health. First, I just wanted to ask if you could tell me a little bit about yourself. How long have you been on the island? Were you born on the island?
Yeah, it's been a long way since I've been here at Kaliwungu, and I like it.
And what kind of things do you like about it?
See, we got only a peaceful life here in Elko, and that's why I like it. And also the weather too, just because we got only two climates. Mm. There's hot or cold, wind or dry.
It's much easier.
Like it more easier,
yeah. You know, the Northern Territory has the highest rate of kidney disease in Australia, according to the Australian Bureau of Statistics. However, before this dialysis unit was opened, patients were required to stay in Darwin to receive their life-saving dialysis because there were no other options on the island. How long have you been on dialysis for?
I think it's nearly 2 years now. Oh. Here I am on dialysis in 2 years with my wife. She got sick. She's on dialysis as well. Elko only done more dialysis here, you know, instead of going to Darwin all the time and spend our time there in Darwin.
My name is Kat and I work for an organisation called Purple House. We run dialysis in remote Aboriginal communities. 3 years ago we opened dialysis out here. There's 22 patients on dialysis. They'd been trying to get nurse assist dialysis out here for many years. So yeah, they asked me if I would open up the dialysis unit, which I did, and I've been here ever since.
Can you tell me what actually happened before there was any dialysis unit here?
It was a home hemodialysis unit. So there was one patient who did her own dialysis, but the rest of the patients, when they started dialysis, they had to go back to Darwin. Pretty much everyone had to move to Darwin and with their family as well, if they were the carer for the children. So they'd start dialysis and you were sent to Darwin to pretty much live.
Because that would be for the rest of your life.
Yes.
You have dialysis.
Yeah, because there's no cure when you've got end-stage kidney disease, unfortunately.
90% of end-stage renal failure in remote Aboriginal communities is caused by diseases such as type 2 diabetes. I was interested to hear from Charlie about his own experience with end-stage renal failure.
Why do you think that your kidneys aren't working? What do you think is the problem that made it?
Well, in the past, we exactly didn't know what to eat when the season comes. Before, we didn't know. We just straight away got the sugar, you know. Have a sugar with 3, 4, 6 spoon on a cup. I didn't know because I was trying to do it myself. But I didn't know about what mistake that I done. You know, because our people, we didn't learn in the past what the diet could keep us in future. So I end up in dialysis now.
We didn't learn in the past what the diet could give us in the future. This speaks to a painful reality, how the introduction of Western food has brought hidden risks that many Yolngu never had the chance to understand. The effects of these changes are now felt across generations, with kidney failure and chronic disease becoming part of a future that no one saw coming.
This happened now. I'm going to share this same story to other people now.
In the past, Yolngu people followed the seasons to eat, the living system that creates a balanced, healthy diet. Can you tell me a bit about the Yolngu calendar?
Okay, it's Bunmu, Taratara, Rarandara. All those five seasons that I told you. It's going to tell you what to eat, the food you can eat on those seasons. Yeah. Right time. For example, if you eat in Taratara, you'll be eating that it's a muscle.
Oh, like a muscle.
Yeah.
Like a shellfish.
It's like a shellfish, And that's why we usually notice what the season and every food that grows in the pushtaka, we notice straight away. It's the connections, all the connection with the weather and plant and the seafood what we eat, even food that bushtaka, we know exactly. For example, we notice medawar is starting to grow yam. You know yam,
right? Yeah.
Yes, it's the root starting. We notice straight away, it's medawar. And after medawar, we notice even the wind goes by south, west, east, and north. And we know the winds come this way, we know what to eat, you know. Yeah.
And how did you learn that? Is that from your grandparents and your parents?
Yeah, it's been passed over from my grandfather. I'm watching to another, you know, it's always passing over and over. Yeah. We notice that what we eat and what we see or what we feel through air, it's part of the grandfather that passed over to us. So we exactly don't know what to eat when the season comes.
There wasn't kidney disease out here years and years ago. Colonisation, all the food and everything has impacted severely. And you can tell with the diabetes, with the heart disease, with the kidney disease.
Can I just go back to when patients are first diagnosed? How do they take that diagnosis? Do they accept it? How do you find that the patient deal with that diagnosis? Because like you said, it's lifelong.
It is. Some people will not choose to ignore, but they just don't really want to think about it too much. Some people, they don't refuse to go into Darwin. It's more complex than that. There's so many responsibilities and things in community. So people are not wanting to shift to Darwin's. So some people choose to go down the conservative route and choose not to have dialysis. Now that we've got dialysis back on community, it's made a huge difference because they'll also talk to the dialysis patients. Like Charlie, he's really good. If any of the males are starting on dialysis, they'll come in and see him on the dialysis machine and have a look and just see the whole process, how it works.
Dialysis on Elko Island is a lifeline. But it's not without its challenges. Patients must undergo treatment 3 times a week, spending hours connected to a machine that filters their blood, a process that's physically and emotionally demanding. Beyond the treatment itself, there's the mental toll of managing a chronic condition and the disruption it brings to daily life. However, having dialysis available on country through services like Purple House and with a consistent nurse like Kat makes a world of difference.
It's not a drama with the dialysis. I'm pretty keen Cat usually pick me up 7 o'clock every morning, you know, to dialysis. But I like it. But I like it. It's the only option to keep you well, no?
Is it hard to explain to patients exactly what's happening with your kidney and what dialysis is? Because it's quite a complex system to understand.
Yeah, it can be really complex. And that's why we have some Yongo staff that work alongside me, and then they can explain things. Not everything can be translated, but that's where I'll say to my patients, who's the best person to talk to? It's trying to do it the right way and get the right person through the Gotatal system, which is their kinship system out here, to talk to them, because of course there's sometimes avoidance relationships, so you wouldn't be able to get certain people to explain things. We need to start teaching from a very young age, from when they're children, and doing that education.
We should share this information to stop this dialysis, not to have this, not to drink this. You'll end up in dialysis. So that's the only way we can stop the dialysis. Yeah. You can see, when they're young, they know nothing. When they're growing up, they're starting to realize now. We should give this message pass from school. The school teacher should do that, starting from the infant, right up to adults. Now we temakule. Now we do all do it. Yakaman mak ngata right ni do kaluk ngata. Pala nyakam na to ngay lakam dokta na walang wakulong ng matokado le mang gitte de. Wal naman ito mang ikum di chay na na matokaluk ngata. Mara mato yakap ulo redikton. O na yakan matokit ni mire de. Ton yan matumatingutan yang ngalapule ya. Mara ma healthy no matongat. Ngutan. Ito niya ada akong message. Ara, ibarara. Yo, mind mark. I just encourage the younger people that have a right food to when they grow up and never get this kind of sickness analysis. Stay healthy.
Can you tell me, with your dialysis, is it interrupting your life? Is that a big problem for you?
Interrupting me is the time. Only 4 hours, you know, 4 hours. You'll spend your time 4 hours. But I like it. But I like it. It works. Yeah. Even though we go about 7 o'clock.
It's very early.
You know, very early.
I go in the morning and get the machines ready. So we have to line the dialysis machines, and I do a couple of tests, and then I'll pick up the two patients. We have a prearranged time. So it's normally 8 o'clock I'll pick them up, and then I put them both on the machine. They're between 4 to 5 hours, depending on the patient. And then they'll have breakfast. So I cook them like spaghetti and eggs, and they have a cup of tea or cup of coffee. And then they'll be on the machine for 4 to 5 hours. We've got a TV, and we just sit there and have yarns, and they tell me stories. Mm-hmm. Then I'll take them off the machines, and they get aged care meals for lunch, drop them home. Sometimes we'll do a few jobs along the way home. Sometimes we'll pick up family and take family to the supermarket, and because it's really hot up here. And then I clean up, and then I'm done. So I'm kind of a bit of everything. I'm the nurse, I'm the social worker, I'm the cleaner, I'm the driver.
I feel like your job doesn't end when you turn the dialysis machine off.
No, not at all. I think the dialysis side of it is just a very, very, very small part of what we do, because to be in the community and things, I can't just shut off. I can't just be like, no, I'm the nurse and go home and things. I'm adopted by one of my patients. So I'm related to all the patients through that adoption. And so I've got lots of family here, and they'll sometimes call me up, or I'll go over and sit there and talk to them, and they think of me, you know. So my patient Beege has adopted me as her sister. So her children think of me as their mother and things. So you're not just a nurse out here. You're part of the community, part of the family. You get heavily involved in the community, and it's a really beautiful, beautiful thing to be a part of.
What would you say is the most rewarding part of your job?
I really enjoy getting patients back home. So I work every Christmas, having them back home for Christmas. When you see the patients coming on the plane, and, you know, some of them hadn't been home for 10 years. We hired an Air North plane to get the patients here for the day for the opening. And you'd see all the grandkids running up and down. And they were so excited because their family members were coming home. And for me, seeing the difference of getting them back on community and actually turning up to dialysis every day, it just warms my heart, because you know you've got them back home. They're with family. They're back on country. You're getting people back home with family. Like, it's beautiful.
It's incredible. What would you say are some of the biggest challenges in providing dialysis out here?
Just that we've only got 4 spots at the moment. You've got 22 patients on dialysis, and not being able to have everyone back on community can be hard. So it's community decision as to who's here. And it's just all the hurdles that come with being remote. Like, how do you get your supplies? It's not easy getting everything out here. Everything has to come by barge and working alone.
Yeah, there's a lot of responsibility on you.
Yeah, it is. But it's good. The community looks after me and works really well alongside me. I'm really lucky to be able to live and work out here and learn from my patient.
And you talked a little bit about the importance of the Guru2 system. Can you expand a little bit about how the cultural sensitivities are really important when managing and caring for patients and how you incorporate that into each day?
Yeah, so it's things like you can't have a brother and sister on dialysis together, and there might be certain circumstances where I may have to, but I will explain it to the patients first and ask them if they're both okay with having dialysis with their yuppa or wawa, and I've got like a curtain that I can pull across. But it's just making sure that you're providing dialysis in a safe way and that you're making sure that it's the appropriate patients to be on together. I just talk to my patients and just ask them if I ever have any questions about anything. I've got quite a few patients like Charlie. I'll say, what do I do about this? Or who do I talk to? And they're really good at steering me in the right direction. Yeah. Or if I was doing something wrong, they'd just pull me up straight away and say, that's not appropriate if you do it this way. I'm lucky I've got that relationship with my patients.
So I was going to ask you, how do you actually learn all that?
My patients teach me everything. One of my patients is on the ARDS board, so she provides cultural awareness training. So she's forever teaching me, and you just have to sit there and listen. And so I'll just sit there and listen to my patients, and they'll just tell me stories. And every day there's new stories that they're telling me about the past and different things. It's really from my patients and from community is how I learn everything. Because I've been here for so long now, people trust and know me, so I can go and ask who's appropriate to talk to and things like that.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, how do you build up that trust? And I guess it's just being a presence in the community and being really entwined and embedded in the community.
Yeah, and not just trying to come in with my Bullinder ways and trying to do things my way, about working together. And it's okay if things don't go the way that you think they should. And you just have to learn to be flexible and listen to people, listen to community. There's a lot going on and people have a lot going on in their lives. It's not just dialysis. There's a lot of sick people and we have a lot of funerals and it's long. I've been to some of the funerals and you're there for 10 days and they're having dialysis on top of grieving and doing different cultural obligations.
And how do you incorporate those cultural obligations into their dialysis treatment? Because I guess they have to have a routine of 3 times a week.
Yeah, it's just about being flexible. And if they've got something on, or say a body is coming into community, they can do a shorter dialysis and we just agree on it together so that they can meet their cultural obligations.
Yeah, sounds like flexibility is really the key word.
100%. It's very different than being in mainstream. You can't have everything set in stone because things will happen out here. Sometimes you have power outages, water outages, the barge doesn't arrive. So you've got to be quite prepared for everything. Yeah.
What impact have you noticed that dialysis with their patients has had on their families?
Oh, everything, like having grandparents back home and these elders, a lot of them are the leaders of the community. And when they're away from town, you don't have some of these strong leaders here and they're able to steer their children and grandchildren in the right directions and just get themselves better. Like some of them, I've had one patient who's been in ICU like 4 or 5 times. He missed 3 weeks of dialysis when he was in Darwin and he'll come back out here soon and he never misses. He rings me up at 6 o'clock in the morning, like I'm his mum in the Guru2 system. And he's like, mum, I'm ready. He's happy to come to dialysis, happy to be here and just seeing the joy on the whole family's face because they really miss them. They've lived out here their whole lives and then they're stuck in Darwin for years at a time. And so just seeing them just sitting there having yarns with their family, cooking outside, it's lovely.
Amazing. So it seems like it's had not just an impact on the patients, but on the whole community, their families, and just the way the community runs.
Yes, it does. We had one patient, he's a reverend, and so he was missing out on doing his preaching at church, and now he's back in community. He's had a transplant now, so he's back in community permanently, but he's home with his family and bringing up those emerging leaders and the emerging reverends. He can teach them where it's harder to do when they're stuck in Darwin.
That's so important to hear, I think, for people to hear those stories, that it doesn't just stop in the dialysis room, but it just spreads throughout the community, the impact that you're having and at Purple House.
Yeah, and it does. You're bringing people back home with family. Like if you can think, like, you know, imagine you have to move 600 kilometres away from your family, from where you grew up, from culture and everything, and then you're stuck in a town where it's foreign to you. There's all sorts of the complexities. You're also having to pay for accommodation in Darwin. You're still having to pay for accommodation here. It's so complex when they have to go into town.
To leave our home or hometown, that's awkward. Some families, they miss their family. We can't afford it, you know, because we have to pay to rent now. The average of the clients, it's growing up. It is a small island, and I'm pretty worried about it, you know, because I did experience myself. So I won't let other people to have those kind of disease.
Why do you think that's happening?
There's no information, there's no proper story to share around. To stop this issue, you know, before it gets to that stage. Cat usually rotate all the clients, spend 3 months, and then rotate back to down. Another one comes. And that's the only option Cat can do his job, just to rotate people. But lucky we got 2 units now. We need only 2 qualified nurses to do the dialysis. And as long as we have got a doctor here,
are there other traditional things that can help your kidneys and help you feel better?
Well, it's only a long bomb just to help. There's a lot of clients in Darwin having a long bomb now.
Yeah. Can you describe what it is?
It's the long one that's stuck on the root of the mangrove.
Long bum, also known as a mud whelk or mangrove snail, is found in the coastal mangroves of Elko Island. These snails are rich in protein and essential minerals like iron, potassium, magnesium and calcium. They are traditionally believed in Yolu medicine to support health and well-being, including helping to regulate blood sugar levels.
And do you have to cook it or can you just eat it?
Anytime. If you want raw, you can eat. If you want cooked, you can eat it.
And so it's been showing to help people
with dialysis? Yeah, that's help people, very good,
And did you know about that beforehand or is that something that's...
No, I think it's good for people with stage 4. Stop on that limit, no? Yeah, because long bomb can try to protect the same spot.
So that's really those 2 different worlds working together. There's the dialysis.
Dialysis.
And then...
Yeah, you want dialysis, yeah.
Yeah, that's really interesting. Can you talk a little bit about the use of traditional medicine?
We try and do hunting trips so we can go out bush and eat that traditional medicine like lichen, which is mangrove worms. That's one of the highest sources of iron that you can actually get, the traditional foods. And I'll try it with them. I tried the lichen. And
what did that taste like?
It tastes like oysters. It just tasted like seafood. I've tried turtle. I'll try all of it. I've been out in the mangroves with the ladies and tried to get long bums and mud mussels. I'm not very good at finding the mud mussels, but the ladies laugh at me because I'm looking and buying all like I won't find anything.
And what kind of things did you used to get when you went hunting?
Fish, crayfish, oysters, the mangrove worms, long bomb, all those fish, what the sea's got, even the turtle too.
What kind of things make you feel healthy?
Fishing or hunting urban bush food.
Can you talk to me a little bit about your connection to the land? Do you think it's important for your health?
I still connected to the land. I'm still connected to it. That if the doctor comes and say, you got 2 days, then you're going to pass away. Okay, we get people with songline now. All songline is connected to the birds, water, country, you know, everything.
Songlines are more than just stories. They are pathways that connect people to country, ancestors, and the cycle of life.
That songline have to encourage him back to his land. You know, and before you pass away, he can listen to your songline to make him feel right. Okay. For a last time. You know, bring your peace or something like that before you get dressed.
Can you explain, because a lot of Ballander people listening won't know what a songline is. Can you explain to people?
It's a little bit difficult with the Ballander way. Yeah, you can't understand the songline, what a songline is. And only the people feel or understand it. It's all. Yeah. But I like music. And that's my other songline too.
dialysis is more than a treatment. It's an emotional journey. On Elko Island, long hours on the machine, the weight of chronic illness and time away from country take a toll. But mental strength is just as vital as physical care.
I have to win this. Yeah, I have to be possible.
So do you feel like it's mental in your mind as well as in your body?
Yes. Yeah. See, a lot of people thinking I'm going to go pass away. You know? Or a lot of people saying that when I say I am on stage four, you know, and my emotions are no good. And they are trying to give up, you know.
Thinking that, yeah, that it's not going to work.
Not going to work. Yeah. That's the awkward issue.
Yeah.
First thing.
Yeah. So it's really important to be strong in your mind.
You're strong, and also someone to counsel the person to make them strong. What to do instead of thinking. You know? Yeah. This is what I'm talking about. It's the startup people with a stage four.
Yeah.
They usually think all the time like that. You know?
Kidney disease progresses in five stages, starting with mild damage and worsening as the kidneys lose function. In early stages, symptoms may be minimal, but by stage four, dialysis preparation begins. Stage five, or end-stage kidney disease, means the kidneys can no longer filter waste, making dialysis or a transplant essential. For many on Elko Island, this stage brings major life changes. And how do you stay so positive?
Well, I'm saying positive because I follow the correct information, what the doctor says, all the information that what to eat. That's why you can see him still fit.
Yeah.
Walking around, doing something a little bit. Bit. Get a broom for 5 minutes, 6 minutes to sweep my floor out, you know. I have to be active. I mean, just because we got no vehicle to access out, you know. It's very, very awkward. We have to stay all the time in the house. Next day, go for dialysis for 4 hours. 3 hours spending in the house, like sitting as a housebound now.
So it's getting people to get out and moving.
Try to support Ori's body or the movement.
How do you look after the mental and emotional well-being of your patients?
We just have fun. We just laugh all the time, and they know they can ring me out of hours if they're really struggling and things. And I also kind of look after the whole family. I'll spend time with their children and with their grandchildren, and there's also those boundaries, but it's just having fun. We'll do karaoke and dialysis sometimes and just do some singing. And it's just about making sure they're happy because it's a long time on dialysis. It's hard being on dialysis. Yeah. That's three times a week for 4 to 5 hours. Like, you're stuck on a machine. It's, you know, you got to have fun.
I wanted to go back just to talk a little bit more about how you think patients balance those two different worlds, because it is two very different worlds, the Western biomedical dialysis world and then the more traditional Yolngu world. How do you see them balancing that? Do you have any stories that you can share about the clash between the two different worlds?
The patients, when they go into Darwin and missing dialysis, that's a pure example of the two worlds clashing because they're not used to. In the Yolngu world, it's not like you have to be here and do this three times a week. And it is very hard for them to get their head around, no, I have to go to dialysis three times a week because otherwise I will get sick. They're not resistant at all to coming to dialysis out here every time they turn up.
I think that says a lot about you actually as well, just the environment that you create for your patients and the care that you give
to them. And you have to. It can't be a sterile hospital-like environment. And we're all out here living and working out here. You've got to have fun, and that's not in my nature either. No. I'd get bored if I was at work and it was real sterile. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's never a day where we're not laughing away. And yeah, life's tough, so you've got to have fun.
I really feel that the dialysis unit is actually helping to bridge those two worlds just because of the way that you've set it up and the way that you work with your patient.
Yeah, and Purple House is great at doing that. Our patients are our bosses and they lead us how we should be providing care and everything. So we try and work alongside our patients and do things in a culturally appropriate way. And you can't come in with your Ballander mindset and do everything. You have to do both ways. And there does have to be some rules, but you have to be flexible as well.
What are your hopes for the dialysis unit or dialysis on Elko Island?
That we get a bigger dialysis unit, that we start with a lot more of preventative treatment and things so that we're not having to have people on dialysis. But it'll be great in the future, if I can get a bigger unit and I've got local staff working with me, and then we can start with more of the education and just get more people back home.
Do you think there's ways that we can stop people having to get to that stage of having that?
That's correct, yeah. That's a good answer. That we should share this information to stop this dialysis, you know, not to have this, not to drink this, you know, you'll end up in dialysis. So that's the only way we can stop the dialysis, yeah. So I have to pass over to another people too, you know, about what mistake that I done. Mm-hmm. I can share to the other people I can, not to this, to this one, not to this, to this one. I have to train or teach people for certain healthy stories.
We're really trying to share some positive stories from Elko Island. I was wondering if you'd like to share any positive stories that you've seen or been involved in through the dialysis unit.
There's one which my patient was happy for me to share. He had terminal cancer, and so we'd worked really, really closely with MeWatch, with NTG, and our aim was to get him home for Christmas. So he'd been on dialysis. He was one of the ones that fought to get dialysis back out on country, and we actually got him home and he got to spend Christmas with his family. It was New Year's Eve, he passed away, but it was the most beautiful death. He knew he was there with his family. He said to me, "I'm dying now, aren't I, mate?" And I was like, "Yeah, you are." Just being able to get him back on country, like that's what he'd wanted. He'd wanted to be home. He didn't want to die in a sterile environment back in town. Having him on country, it was a really sad time, but it was also absolutely beautiful that we could provide him being home. He was one of the really renowned elders in community, and just to have him here with family, that was beautiful to be a part of.
Wow, that's a really incredibly powerful story. Mm. Thank you for sharing that. I just want to really capture what impact that the dialysis unit has had on Elko Island, if you want to summarise that in a few words.
It's about getting people back home where they belong and being back with family and being able to sit up with family at nighttime. Just the joy. Everyone gets so excited when their family's coming home, and or they'll be coming up to me saying, "When's this person coming back and when's this one?" And they get to see their grandkids growing up. A lot of people 10 years in Darwin on dialysis, they've missed out on so much, and they miss out on close families' funerals and things like that. So getting them back home, it's extending people's lives. Some of these patients probably would have passed away if they'd been in Darwin and not been able to come back out. You just see their whole demeanour. Some of them will be walking with a walker when they first come out here, and by the time they've been here for a month or so, they're walking without a walker, and it's just empowering them, and you just see them standing up tall and being proud and being back home.
Yeah, that's incredible. Just the final question about the importance of bringing together those two worlds and the important lessons that Western medicine can learn from Yolngu culture.
Family is very, very important, and we didn't have a whole lot of diseases and illnesses back in the day, and so a lot of the Western colonisation has caused a lot of issues in these communities. Traditional foods, traditional medicines, they do work. They're not going to cure things. And we do need to have some Western medicine and some like Yolngu medicine and things, but allowing that, exploring it. Like Purple House, we do this bush balms. And so that's for pain and itching and things. And it's just asking the questions as well. You know, like the medicine that they've traditionally used out here and the food, and it can lower their blood pressure, and lichen is the highest source of iron. So why would we not be using that rather than giving iron tablets?
Yeah.
And
just so much to learn, and there's just so much out here.
So much. Like I've been here for years and I still get confused with a lot of things, and I still have questions all the time. If you do come out, just ask questions and just listen to the community and find the right people to talk to and just embrace it.
Yes.
It's a beautiful thing. I can't ever imagine leaving here now.
As we wrap up this episode, we've heard from an incredible dialysis nurse and a patient whose strength and resilience remind us just how vital the dialysis unit is on Elko Island. A lesson for all of us on how to summit the highest of mountains.
Final word is, I could say, stay healthy. People, you all must stay healthy, never drink, never eat wrong stuff. Just look after your body. That's my final word. Mind.
You've been listening to Two Worlds, One Health with Dr. Sarah Hania, chatting there with Charlie and Kat from Elko Island about the challenges and rewards of managing chronic disease in remote communities. I'm Luana Grant. Follow Two Worlds, One Health on the SBS audio app or wherever you listen to podcasts for more stories from Elko Island.